One thing that he told me that really stuck with me, he said, stop dunking the ball.
Really?
That was what he said.
Yeah, why?
And not have everything have to be a dunk, because if it's not a dunk, then okay, what's your next move? Motivation wanes. Sometimes you have it, sometimes you don't. Whether it's sports, whether it's business, your mentality is always going to be the thing.
Tell me about hitting plateaus of success and staying motivated through that.
The journey is really the important thing rather than the destination.
The distinction between good versus evil and good and evil. I see things as good and evil, and it goes to flow and walking through life. That's all.
First name, N-E-W.
So.
And where did it come from? Yeah. I want to know the origin of this.
Yeah. So my full name is.
Well, welcome to another episode of Flip Your Friday. I'm your host, Wynn Silberman. This is my co-host, Casey LeBlanc. Casey, we have a great guest today in New Williams. It's a lot of kids' dreams to be able to play basketball for a living. And I think that's what's so cool. And that's why we have this guest here today. We have someone that's done something very, very special in that you found a way to make a living playing the game of basketball. And that is really cool as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Now we could go into, you know, your high school, how you dominated, or you went to Auburn, you went to Fresno State, even grabbing a Division I scholarship is a lot of kids' dreams, you know? But I want to really dig into is to jump actually out of college and get into the pro level, and kind of just walk me a little through your journey as it starts there, because I think that's where it gets really intriguing and interesting. So after Fresno State, talk a little bit about what the G League is for some of our audience that doesn't understand what that is, and then we'll kind of take it from there.
Okay. Yeah, so the G League is basically like the minors in baseball.
Okay.
For basketball. So it used to be called the NBA D League, and the D stood for Developmental League.
Okay.
So it's basically a place where the parent teams, like the Lakers or the Clippers, will send maybe their younger guys or guys that they feel like need a little bit more playing experience. Maybe they're not getting a bunch of playing time on the team. They'll send their guys down to the G League, and they're able to get in those minutes and get in those games and kind of showcase their abilities in order to maybe get picked up by another team, or show to their parent team, like, hey, I can make an impact on this team wherever needed.
And you compare it to baseball and the minors. Quick question on that. When I think of baseball and the minors, I just think of so many players that just kind of get caught there forever, and there's never a real progress up to the show. What's the percentage, or what's your sense of, I mean, when players get shaken down to the G League, is that a real insult to their game, or is there a lot of players that do end up getting opportunity to compete with their parent team?
Yeah, so it really depends on the entry. Typically, when you're on the parent team and you get pushed down to the G League, there's oftentimes very many opportunities for you to get pulled back up to that team or get picked up by another parent team and be on that team. Typically, when you're drafted to a G League team, it can be kind of difficult just because of the politics of the game. Every team has two-way contracts. And
can you explain what a two-way contract is?
So the two-way contract basically says, hey, you're on our parent team, and you're also on this G League team, and you kind of bounce between the two teams.
One's 600 grand and one's 30 grand type thing? Or is it that's what baseball's like?
Yes, actually. Yeah. So
are you paid per game? Is it similar in pro sports, even at the G League level? Are you paid for a season, or how does that work? How do contracts work on the G League?
No, yeah, I think that the pay is either monthly or biweekly.
Okay. So it's not per game. So
as long as you're on the roster.
Yeah. Oh, got it.
Yeah, not per game. For sure.
Okay.
But it kind of, if you are on a two-way contract, you have a lot more opportunity. Typically, the standard player contract is significantly lower, and the opportunities, you know, I mean, you just kind of have to seize your moment when you're in that space, because you know, just the politics of the game. Yeah.
Well, talk about seizing your moment. Let's talk about your experience with the G League. You were at what was the team? The
Ignite.
Talk a little bit about that, and then let's jump from there.
So, when I left Fresno State, I signed with a pretty big agent, an agency, and he's the one who got me the opportunity to go up and to Walnut Creek and play with Ignite. And
was that Bill Duffy then, or
no? It my agent was Aaron Goodwin.
Oh, okay,
yeah, with Goodwin Sports.
Yep.
So I went up there, and I did well. I did well enough. I played really well. I shot the ball really well. I shot a really good percentage. You know, I made an impact. But I could have done more. I went in with the mindset, you know, but before I went up to G League Ignite, I had had two workouts with the Clippers and specifically with Jerry West. And I had a lot of talks with Jerry and about being able to showcase my ability to be a point guard. So when I went up to Ignite, I'm like, okay, teams are going to be watching. People are going to be paying attention. I need to showcase my ability to be a point guard.
Well, there's some things way right there. I mean, that's very, very cool. I mean, Jerry West is literally, I mean, the logo, the NBA logo, yeah, know, arguably is Jerry West. Is there something that stuck with you? Did he give you any specific pointers that you're like, damn, that's really something that I need to grab hold of and really carry through?
Yeah. One thing that he told me that really stuck with me was he said, stop dunking the ball.
Really?
Why? That was what he said.
Yeah, why?
Was it because he's white and he can't jump?
The reason why he said that was basically because he was telling me to develop my touch and feel around the basket. He's like, you know, when you get to the NBA, when you're playing against these guys that are, you know, 7'1", 7'2", 7'3", 7'4", there's a lot of trees in the paint, and you have to be able to maximize your ability to finish around the rim.
Wow.
And not everything's going to be able to be a dunk. So he was big on me using the backboard. You know,
was that hard for you? Because your vertical is what, 42?
53.
Come on.
Yeah.
53?
Yeah. I've seen him like flush. I saw him fly one time. I took him to the district. That's a whole nother conversation. But yeah. I could tell you that.
53.
That's what is it? Jumping, what, that's jumping over you, because aren't you 5 foot? Anyway, go ahead.
That's always with this guy. What is it? What's an average NBA vert?
Probably 38, maybe?
Yeah.
38?
Yeah, I think between
38, 42, kind of similar. Yeah. Like NFL guys are kind of the same. So 42 is elite in the
42
NFL.
42 is elite, but 53. So, but for Jerry West to tell you that, you really, that has to kind of change your game, because you have such an, that's your, one of your pivotal advantages, right?
Yes. Well, yes and no, because, you know, I mean, when I was younger, I did dunk the ball a lot more. But, you know, as you get older, as guys get bigger, stronger, more physical, there tends to be less opportunity to dunk the ball every possession, especially with the way that the defense changes, how long you're allowed to be in the paint, like those different things. Kind of the help, especially like in college, a lot of teams in college, they pack the paint, so it's a little bit harder to have those opportunities. There are those opportunities, but there are less. So then at the pro level, guys are a lot longer, they're bigger, they're stronger. Now, you can't stay in the paint. You can't really pack the paint. But since you have a 7'2 wingspan, you can probably get there pretty quick. So that's what he was kind of big on teaching me, is kind of just being able to move through that and not have everything have to be a dunk. Because if it's not a dunk, then, okay, what's your next move?
I'm sorry, we just can't move on past 53-inch vert without asking a couple of questions here. So, because that's abnormal.
It's superhuman.
Yeah, that's superhuman. You're flying at that point. So what percentage of the 53 is something that you train for, and what percentage is just God-given?
That's a great question.
What, like, are you training for your vert? Is this something where you got out of the womb and you're, you know, jumping over human beings?
So a lot of it was natural. I think when I was a sophomore in high school, I tested my vert and it was about a 38.
When did you dunk first? How old were you?
12.
Wow. Okay. And you were probably what? 5'8"?
Yeah. Like 5'7", 5'6".
That's crazy.
Yeah.
dunk it a basketball, or are you just trying to get it over with like a tennis ball?
Basketball.
Basketball.
Yeah.
Wow. So it was mostly natural, God-given.
Yeah. But then after I tore my ACL is when I kind of honed in and focused on actually training and what that looked like.
What before pre-ACL, what was your highest vert? This is a great point.
It may have been in the low 40s.
Exactly. And then you tear your ACL and you start training on things that you know are important and you can go way higher. So people are going to get hit with an ACL, ankle, Achilles, some sort of injury. And then when you start refocusing, you actually can and should be better than what you originally were, right?
Most definitely.
Yeah, to walk us through. That's such an interesting point. I don't mean to deviate too far off of the NBA career, and the pro career, but we're going to get back to it. But so you get hit with an ACL injury when you were how old? What year was this?
It was my junior year in high school, so I believe I was probably 16 or 17.
16, 17. Okay, and you're getting recruited.
Yeah, at the time, you're probably, number two, number three in all of California as the top recruit in California, right? At that time? For guards, right?
Yeah.
So you're getting recruited by most everybody, right? Especially on the West Coast. Okay. And then you tear your ACL, and I'm assuming some people back off.
Yeah, did everything fall off?
Yeah. Yeah, a lot, majority of the really big schools.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. And so walk us through what impact that had on you at that time. Because as a 16, 17-year-old, everyone is telling you how good you are, right? Like at that stage and that level, if you're getting all these letters, phone calls, you are one of the best. You're just being told of how great you are. Then this is probably your first time or what I would assume to be your first real sporting adversity. Is that true, somewhat true? Your ACL tearing. And what impact did that have on you, like mentally?
Yeah. The way it kind of unfolded was it happened in the first game of the season in the first 5 minutes of the game, but I didn't know. So I went to block a shot. I came down wrong, kind of tweaked it. And I just kept playing. I went in at halftime, put some ice on it. I finished the game with, I think, 22-10. But I didn't feel like terrible. I was like, it's probably nothing. I wake up the next day, it's huge. My knee's huge. So I go into my trainer, I'm like, yo, like,
what is
this?
Fix this. Yeah.
So he does a couple tests and he's like, oh, like everything seems strong. We're gonna go out onto the court. We're gonna run a little bit. We're not gonna have you practice today. But we had a game the next day. He was like, we'll see how you feel for the game. We're not going to practice today, but we'll see how you feel for the game. So the next day comes, my knee's still swollen, but I'm like, I could play. So, and it was one of our rivals at the time, Loyola. So I definitely wanted to play. I ended up playing that game. I had 18-10.
The whole game.
Yeah, I was.
Did you feel pain?
I did, and I was.
Do you feel instability? Because pain you can deal with. Instability feels like you might lose half of your leg. I tore my ACL. Same thing, and I tried to play football with it. And I felt like below my knee, my leg was going to fall off at any given point. It could go a different or a 90 degree direction. Yeah.
So I had no instability at the time.
Really?
Yeah, there was no instability, and I'll circle back to that.
Okay.
So, I played the game. Then I go and I got an MRI afterwards, and they said, it's probably just a bone bruise. Like, everything looks good. So I'm like, okay.
On your MRI?
The report said, yes. It's okay. Everything intact.
So I'm like, okay, cool. They were like, sit for a couple weeks, and then you'll be good. I did that. I sat. I came back. Had three monster games in a row. And then there was this game called the Jordan Take Flight Challenge. And that was like, I was having a crazy game within like the first 3 minutes. I had 10 or 15 points. And it was looking like it was going to be a really great game. This is the game where I felt the instability. You know, I went into the pain, I did a jump stop, and then my knee just gave out. And I'm like, that's weird. So that happened every quarter until they told me, hey, look, like, just sit down. And afterwards, we had another doctor review the MRIs that I got. And that doctor was like, yeah, your ACL is gone. It's nothing there.
Well, you basically had, because the way, you know, the way MRIs work is the orthopedist tends to rely on the radiologist's analysis of the film. So obviously there was a jackass that was giving the report that said everything's fine. And then it took a physician to go, wait a second, let me see the photo.
Well, it usually right? on an ACL, you tear it. It doesn't, it's gone, one of mine, it was gone. The guy said, oh, it's like floating in space. I'm like, wait, what? He said, yeah. And honestly, when you read a report, most people look for tears. So if they don't see it, it's like, oh, it's still intact.
Interesting.
Like, wait, what?
Yeah.
You guys go to school for this shit? Like, what are we doing?
And I think it's because the way that the MRI photos are taken, it's basically in a series of grays.
Right.
So if you don't really see the tear, then it's like, well,
fine,
this gray is there.
That's right.
My trainer looked at it. There was a couple of people that looked at the MRI and they were like, oh, yeah, like
everything's fine. Mm-hmm.
This doctor saw it and was like, yeah, nothing's there. And then we looked at that doctor and we're like, you're insane. Everybody else is saying that there's nothing wrong, and now you're coming with something that's as crazy as this. You actually
don't need an ACL. I don't have an ACL in my knee right now. And they're like, you're so old and washed up, you actually have no reason to go back in and put one in.
Yeah.
So you actually don't need it, so you could, you know.
It's stability.
But like it is stability, correct, yeah.
For an for an elite athlete, you need it.
Yeah, yeah.
So you went with this physician, I assume, and he went in there and... Or what happened?
Well, no, we got a second opinion because we thought they were crazy. And then our second opinion said, oh.
I see it now.
Yeah.
I see what he sees.
That's right.
Wow.
It's actually not there.
Wow.
So that was about 3 months after the tear.
Do you, at this point, are you starting to see scholarship offers? Or you make an announcement, or how does that work? Like, you start to see offers go away?
So... my AAU coach started calling teams saying, hey, if new commits right now, would you take them? They're like, what's going on? Yeah. Like, what's happening?
Interesting.
And that's kind of how the word started getting out. And then, you know, I obviously was sitting. So people are asking.
You're a junior, though, so you still have another year.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
At this time, I still have another year.
So you get cut. You get probably what? Cadaver transplant at that point, or
no? I did hamstring.
Cadaver tied the knot, made it stronger.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, basically, we asked them, like, you know, first of all, why this is a injury that a lot of people feel almost immediately. Uh-huh. Like somebody tears their ACL.
Did you know immediately?
Like, yeah. But mine was 25 years ago.
But you felt it. You knew something was.
There was a pop
fucked up.
Yeah. But it's in football, it's a little bit different because the impact is a little bit different. Yeah. So if you get hit straight on it, you can feel it kind of pop. Yeah, you can hear it too.
Yeah. So we're like, you know, why didn't we know this immediately? So they said I'm part of like some 10% of the world of people called copers. And the muscles around my knee were so strong that it basically held my knee intact. So I didn't really... have any issues.
It's called a coper.
Yeah.
Oh, because you can cope with pain.
Yeah. I was like, okay, well, that's dumb because I wish I would have knew.
Yeah. He's like, copers copers don't know.
So to come full circle back to the original question about, you know, just mentally the impact. I basically sat in the car after I got this information. I said, okay, I could either go one or two ways with this. I can either sulk and be, you know, upset, be devastated, or I can look at the opposite path and kill an ant with a sledgehammer in terms of my rehab, in terms of coming back, in terms of being better than I was before, and in terms of proving to everybody that thinks, oh, well, his career is over now. This is a high-flying, you know, uber-athletic guard who just lost his ACL. Yeah, he's done. That was basically the consensus.
Do you think, because this is an interesting point, is that if you grow up and you're ultra athletic, you've been told you're great your entire life, certain point you have something like this happen, you didn't have to train up until this point. So an ACL at that point in stage in your career can actually, if looking back, I guess is the question, could be ultra important in the sense that you're going to train differently having to go through that because you hadn't had to do that.
It's going to accelerate your success, ironically.
To this point, and then physically will change you forever because you understand rehab and training and what the impact can be. A lot of people don't learn that maybe too late, right? Like they just get by on God-given athletic ability. Did you experience some of that?
Yeah, that was actually what I was looking forward to because that was something that I was aware of. I basically rationalized it in that way, like, well, I haven't trained
ever. You know.
This is not like, you know, when I'm in the weight room at school and stuff, like
you're on
I'm
your
going
phone.
Around talking yeah. and kind of like not really taking it, you know, super serious because like,
you didn't need to.
Yeah. So it put me in a different mindset. And the day after my surgery, I started my rehab. Like I was ready to go. Mm-hmm. I immediately with the immobilizer on and everything, I was like, all right, let's start my rehab. I went in into the place and my physical therapist said, you know, well, how soon do you want to come back? He's like, you know, 6 months, 9 months, a year. Like I said, I want to come back in 4 months. And then he kind of laughed and was like, ha, like, yeah, but seriously, I'm like, I want to come back in 4 months. Three, if can do that.
Mm-hmm. And mentality. So
he's like, well, that's not really possible. Like it takes this long and blah, blah. I said, yeah, sure. I want to come back in 4 months. So that day they started me off on some, you know, light exercises and was like, you know, we want you to do this every day. It's going to hurt, you know, just power through it. And they have bands that you use typically when you're doing rehab and the bands go yellow, green, blue, black in terms of, you know, resistance and basically, yeah, resistance. So we start off on the yellow band, of course, it's day one. And they're like, you know, it was the schedule was every Monday and Wednesday. I came in on a Wednesday. They were like, okay, when we see you again on Monday, you should be able to do the green band by then. And you know that will be you're making great progress
because they're telling you they're treating you as a normal patient,
a common,
yeah, a common. And there's something yeah. to be said for that.
What was the other word you use? You're the 10% is coper. The what? Coper. Yeah, you're like I'm yeah. a coper, not a common. Like let's get this straight.
Yes, yeah, so I would assume that part of your story is you accelerate through those bands like crazy.
I was out for blood when I came back in on the Monday. I came in on a Wednesday. That was the day after my surgery. I came back in on the Monday and I was on the black band.
There you go.
And they're like,
were you before surgery, what type of mentality were you? Were you more like, was it more, or were you, did you always have the killer in you?
No, I've always kind of had that. And, you know, I can thank my dad for that because even when I was doing, you know, really good, he always would tell me, you're behind the eight ball. Look at this person who's ranked ahead of you. Look at this person. You're better than him.
Interesting.
So I always kind of had, you know, the killer instinct. And this just really lit the fire even more because, as you said, like all of that underdog killer instinct mentality was paying off. People were starting to recognize. People were seeing I was being acknowledged as, you know, somebody who was, you know, a high level player. So it was like I was getting my flowers.
You know, it's interesting. You're talking about high level operating at an elite level. Casey, this question kind of goes to you too. I think you touched on something very important. You said your father was influential on driving a concept of a killer instinct, right? But in business, Casey, isn't it important? Do you tend to try to surround yourself with strong people, for lack of a better term, or people that have a driven sense of leadership, that have a sense of a height that there's always going to want to push you? Or talk to me a little bit about environment. Is that important in business? It's certainly important for you because you're sharing it with us and you're an elite player. So it was important in your environment. In the business environment, how important is it to surround yourself with people that push you?
Well, see if this resonates with you, because I think in sports, it's similar to business, is that you don't necessarily always control your surroundings, right? And you also don't control what happens to you. What you do control is how you react, is how you are. So it's almost like when you're on the airplane, they say, you know, put your face mask on first or your air on first. Yeah, you have to think, I got to show up. I got to work on me to be better for others, because you're going to be around people that are not motivating. They're not driven. They're not, you know, a lot of different things. Now, of course, in a perfect world where championships are built or where elite businesses are built, you have a majority with a similar mindset. But I think a lot of it comes down to your own mentality. A lot of it comes down to searching from within. And again, you can pick and choose your friends, can't pick and choose your family.
Yeah.
And sometimes you can't pick and choose who you're surrounded with at work. So there has to be ways in which you can
come from within.
You have to figure out how to find that area in yourself.
Well, it was interesting that you said that you took a moment and you basically like, look, there's two paths here.
Yeah, right? Challenge accepted.
And challenge accepted. And some of that is mentality that I think is built in your DNA. And that's what that drives you. And it's just very, very fascinating.
What's your take on it? Because I think it's a great question from an athlete, especially a pro athlete. Where do you land on some of that with the surroundings and people?
Yeah, I agree. You know, I like to think that sports is kind of holographic in terms of, you know, what we experience in life. So motivation wanes, you know, sometimes you have it, sometimes you don't. Discipline, on the other hand, you can be consistent with. Whether or not you have the motivation, you can still have the discipline to do what you need to do. So whether it's sports, whether it's business, you know, your mentality is always going to be the thing that you can control. And whether or not things outside of you are going in a particular direction, if you can control what you know that you can control, then you can always make sure that you have the best outcome for you, no matter what the circumstances are outside of that.
So I love this. I want to stay on this for a little bit. When I'm fascinated by what people do mentally or mentality wise when things start to go not your way, right? What I mean by that is, like, it's easy to cheerlead when you're winning, not so easy when things get difficult. So what are some pillar things, some fundamental things that you use, not necessarily to motivate, but to, you know, get off the floor, to get off the mat, or to you know, to get up and work out when you don't want to? How do you shift some of that? Because the discipline, you're right. But sometimes people have a hard time starting, or, you know, they go up and down from that standpoint, and it's the consistency of discipline that wins. And so how are you wired for that when things are not going, when the pain hits a certain level, or you can't go any further, or you don't want to do something? What are things that you rely on for to combat that?
I think a lot of that is rooted in your purpose, your why, really. Why are you doing the things that you're doing is really, really important. And how strong your why is will determine how strong your discipline will be, how strong your consistency will be. If you have a really deep-rooted why, like...
What was yours? Or what is yours? Excuse me.
Great question.
So, you know, growing up, my why was, you know, I grew up in, you know, a rough neighborhood. You know, my family struggled at times, and I wanted to be, you know, a pillar for us being able to move out of that. There was times where, you know, I was really, really sick, you know, throwing up, you know, flu. And I would have a workout, and I would grab me a gallon of water, and I would be like, this is, I'm doing this for a reason. So I'm going to go out here, and I'm going to work out, and I'm going to do what I need to do, because my why is bigger than me. And if your why is bigger than you, then it's easy to stay consistent because you always have something that is driving you that won't really wane like motivation will. Because, you know, anybody can be motivated at one time or another, you know, like, you know, I feel really ignited right now. I just watched a great video. You know, I want to go out and get into the gym.
I was just at Tony Robbins. Right.
But if you have a why that's fueling the fire all of the time, then it makes it easy to be consistent because it's something that's bigger than yourself. If it's not bigger than you, then you can always kind of maneuver your way out of it.
I have another point to this. Okay, so we talk about the lows. On the other flip side of it, what about the highs? Because also, success breeds complacency, right? And so this idea of motivation doesn't necessarily always have to be talked about when you're not motivated. It can be when you hit certain levels of success to where you're like, I made it, or my why is accomplished, or you can get in your head in another direction, right? So tell me about hitting plateaus of success and staying motivated through that, or the same discipline and consistency when you've made either money or success. What does that look like for you?
So on the flip side is more about understanding, more about wisdom, more about really honing in on the fact that success is not a destination that we arrive to. We don't arrive to success and say, all right, I'm here and now I can relax. Success is a journey. There's always new goals to hit. There's always, you know, new milestones to reach. And in order to be consistent, it kind of goes back to what my dad was telling me earlier. You're always behind the eight ball. Mm-hmm. So even when you've reached a milestone, there's still more. There's always more. So being able to kind of be wise and understand that I haven't arrived, but this is my success. This is my journey to success. Now, and every milestone that I hit is a new notch on the belt in my journey, because the journey is really the important thing rather than the destination.
Are there things that you appreciate about the journey that make you comfortable with that part of life? What I mean by that, to say it a different way, is some people get motivated by these notches in the belt. You talk about the journey. Explain that journey and being comfortable with the journey and not necessarily the destination. What are the things that you think about when it comes to that?
Yeah, so I mean, the best way for me to stay even keeled is being able to appreciate duality. My ACL injury was just important to my career, as you know, when I got the Mountain West record for threes in a game. They were equally important in different ways. One motivated me in a specific way, and the other motivated me in a different way. So being able to appreciate duality and the fact that whether or not it's a low or a high, they all add to the journey and the character that you build on that journey, which allows you to appreciate the milestones when you reach, you know, your different successes. Being able to see the duality allows you to be able to appreciate when good things happen and when bad things happen. Where you, almost to a point where you don't even label them anymore as good and bad, because that goes back to what you said about the reaction to things. You know, when we put the label on them as good or bad, that's what kind of gives it the fuel to either deter us or to make us complacent.
Go ahead.
No, there's one more point to this where, and I want to make sure I understand this idea, and I haven't heard it phrased like that, a level of duality. But if I'm understanding you correctly, it's that the highs are not quite as high and the lows are not quite as low. So it's this equilibrium of the journey that you're comfortable with, meaning, yeah, I'm going to hit these notches under your belt of success. They're not going to feel like someone else's level of success, because – I'm best, most comfortable with the journey part of it. Same thing with the low, right? And what I mean by that too is the ACL could have derailed a career. You could just go and be, you know, feel sorry for yourself, or it could have, you could have wasted a lot of time, right? And not 4 months, but 4 years to get back, or not to get back as good as you were originally. So it's being comfortable in that journey, which, yeah, you're not going to celebrate the successes as much as maybe some would, but you're also not going to hit the lows as low as some would. And that actually creates a level of maybe peace within. I don't want to put words in your mouth, no, but
I think, or flow. I think what's fascinating about it is I think what you're speaking to is getting to your flow in a way. And I love the game of basketball as a perfect example for what you're talking about in duality. Two quick points, not to get skewed too off, but you know, Eastern religion, Western religion, the very pivotal difference between the two is Christianity is seen as good versus evil, right? In Eastern thought, it's always seen as good and evil.
New, I'd like to give you some context here. I think this is where I can interject a little bit of levity to the conversation is that we think Wynn went to Northwestern. It hasn't been confirmed, but this is where he tells us he went to college.
I'm getting to a point.
Hold on, but I want to add context so when he's listening to some of this nonsense, he has to actually believe it because he studied religion at Northwestern.
Right.
Studied religion. So he, I just wanted good, to tell you, like, you, thank you. If you could talk about something intelligently, I hope it's this.
This is where we get to the good part, though. Basketball is a perfect example of what you're talking to. If you teach and coach a kid about duality in the context of a game, it's the same fucking thing, which I think is beautiful. It's getting to your flow. It's getting in the game.
You had me with that. When you veered to your, you wanted to get to religion
I had to because that's my passion. I loved you speaking to it because a lot of people don't acknowledge the distinction between good versus evil and good and evil. I see things as good and evil. I never like to see things as good versus evil, and it goes to flow and walking through life. That's all I have to say on that.
No, okay? Well done. That's all I have to say. Yeah, I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
That was good.
Back to new, I just think that that's fascinating because the game of basketball is literally, it's a roadmap for how you walk your life. It's pretty fascinating, and that's why I love the game of basketball. That's what I'd like to say.
What's ironic about all of this is my degree is in philosophy with a focus in religious studies.
Wow. Did not know that. We didn't talk
Oh, you did it.
No, this is what's called a spiritual moment.
Yes, it is. Yeah, I feel it. There's a sense of energy and purpose here that we're all...
There was some energy that walked right in the room, too. We don't need to talk about that either.
Okay, New, the question that I'm dying to ask, and we're really pivoting off of religion and energy, is the name, the first name. Is your first name N-E-W?
So,
and where did it come from? Yeah. I want to know the origin of this.
Yeah. So my full name is Nouriel, right?
Nouriel.
Yeah.
Where does that originate?
It's
from?
Arabic. Nur El. So, Nu comes from my initials. My full name is Nouriel Elijah Williams, N-E-W.
Ah.
That's where Nu comes from because a lot of people, they just really couldn't pronounce my name. New is a lot easier to just tell people my name's New, so then I don't have to get into the
yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, you know, that, I mean, they've been calling me that since I was a kid, and so that kind of just stuck with me as I grew up. A lot easier for people to kind of digest and a bit catchy and easy for people to remember.
So we go rapid fire. Thank you for sharing that, by the way. We go rapid fire towards the end, the last 10, 15 minutes of this sit down, and thank you for coming.
This has been awesome.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about what you're doing now. So the pro career is taking a lot of twists and turns. Where are you right now with your pro basketball playing career?
I'm still currently playing. I'm in my fourth year or going into my fourth season upcoming. And, you know, it's been really good for me. I kind of did, the pro basketball my own way when I went to overseas. Originally, I was supposed to, originally everybody wanted me to go to Europe. I had some different calls from some Euro Cup teams and I think a Euro League team. But I wanted to be able to be somewhere where I did not have to be gone for 10 months so that I can get back to my daughter whenever I wanted to. So I ended up going to the Dominican Republic to start my career. And just this past season, I kind of branched out of Latin America. I did a lot of stuff in Latin America early on, but you know, this past season I went to Europe finally and did one of the long seasons. So, you know, my career is actually going in a direction that I can appreciate.
What's the end goal? Is it to play in the NBA?
That's always been a dream of mine, and if the opportunity presents itself, you know, I'm ready to take the opportunity. But if it doesn't present itself, then I'm not going to be sad about it.
How long do you think you could play, like, realistically play professionally, physically, like, with the travel?
Mentally.
With having a daughter, yeah. Mentally, yeah.
Yeah. In theory, you know, I can probably do maybe 10, 13, maybe more years.
Wow.
But in actuality, I want to do a lot less than that. Because like you said, you know, I want to be able to do enough to where I can take care of my daughter. I can be with my family. I'm big on business and building outside of basketball. Basketball is one basket. I like to have multiple baskets so that I can kind of choose my direction. I can kind of say, hey, you know, I want to not do this anymore, and I want to go do something else, and I want to be able to have the opportunity to do that. So I'm big on having, you know, multiple different avenues to create success.
What are some of the passions that you have or some businesses that you're in now?
So for one of the companies that I've recently created is for what we've been talking about, which is, you know, ACL, kind of bridging the gap between training and physical therapy. A lot of people don't really learn how to train until after they tear something, right, or until after they get an injury, because the two fields are very separated.
You just go around with a baseball bat tearing people's ACL. you're gonna learn, motherfucker, how to train.
it's a lot of details that go into physical therapy and learning how to actually train the right way, which isn't present in, you know, strength training.
It's really true.
So that's something that I'm passionate about, and I'm building out a company that kind of help bridges that gap.
Do you have a name? Is there a name for it yet?
Yeah, it's called The Lion Lab.
The Lion Lab.
Yeah.
Cool.
And then the other company is a digital marketing agency that's, you know, based in the sports world and creating content and creating, you know, campaigns that really connect with customers and kind of just the pulse of social media and kind of the era that we're in, which a lot of companies, you know, they're looking for people to kind of say, hey, I have the pulse on this. A lot of people's internal marketing doesn't really have the pulse on, you know, what's now.
Interesting. I'd like to end with this. If you had to choose between Kobe, LeBron, or Jordan as the GOAT, do you have an opinion on that?
Kobe.
Kobe.
Whoa, really?
Yeah.
Over Jordan.
Even though he's the copycat of Jordan.
Yeah. And the reason why I go Kobe and not Jordan. Jordan I think it's 1A and 1B, to be honest. But the reason why I go Kobe over Jordan is because, yes, Kobe did really model his game after Jordan, but he really put a lot more work into developing skill.
Yep.
Which is something I really appreciate.
Interesting.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I think, first of all, thank you very much for sharing some wisdom and we're able to teach Casey a little spirituality on a podcast, which yeah. is great, you know, yeah. so congratulations on that.
Thank you.
I want all the audience to know you guys can like us, talk to us, DM us. It's been fun to actually receive more and more DMs about who you'd like to possibly have us host next time. We're on all the platforms, Case, just so you know, we're on YouTube, we're on Instagram, whatever other platforms that our tech people know. But I'd like to say thank you very much for being here. I really enjoyed it, and that's a wrap.
Yep, incredible. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Appreciate you guys.